Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. We're kind of almost back to schedule. You know, Christmas and New Year always gets things a little bit out of whack. I'm Kenny, and I'm joined by Sandra. Hi Sandra, how are you today?
Hi Kenny, I'm fairly tired right now. My body doesn't know what time it is or what's happening because I've decided to stay up for Wrestle Kingdom the past two nights. And you know what? I don't regret it because I watch New Japan like once a year and it's this weekend. And unfortunately that happens like right after the holidays when everything is crazy anyway. But it was super, super fun. And I watched it with some friends that unfortunately don't live in the same state as me, but we were all texting each other and getting excited about the wrestling. So yeah, like things are good, even though I'm tired and health-wise, it was probably a poor decision, but sometimes we have to make these sacrifices.
And you're going to probably do that for a third night tonight for New Year's Dash, right?
So I think that after we get done recording this, I can probably go to sleep for a little while and then I can get up to watch at 4:30 in the morning. I think I can make it work.
Sure.
But yeah, like it's insane and I shouldn't because I'm already not feeling great and there's like tons of flu stuff going around right now and my body is very susceptible to getting ill. I don't know. I'm still deciding, but I probably will be up for at least a portion of New Year's Dash because I really want to see it because it's fun.
Yeah, it's like the Raw after WrestleMania for
exactly.
We've got various things to talk about. One of the things that is worth bringing up is the potential of a relationship between New Japan and AEW, because obviously Jericho had the match on night two, where he had the match with Takahashi, which was
Tanahashi,
the K in the end. Tanahashi, but it wasn't for the idea was if Tanahashi beat Jericho, he would get a shot at the AEW title, and that was kind of pre-approved by Tony Khan and stuff.
And this was apparently, I forget the stat, I think Sean Rossep tweeted it, but it's like Jericho's first non-title match in New Japan in like 6 years or something.
Yeah, it was, because all of his
other matches have been for some sort of title, or he's been a champion and defending it.
And then also at the same time as that, we have the situation where Access TV dropped New Japan. And apparently the reason is because Access basically said, we want you to have a working relationship with Impact. And when they said they didn't want to, they were let go. So it just kind of feels like it would make the most sense for them to just work together. And I mean, Impact, why not at least just like try and work on the relationship for the next 12 months and then see how it goes? It just seems like such a dumb move to like get rid of it.
Do you mean between Impact or between AEW and New Japan?
Between Impact. Like, if you're Access TV and you own, I mean, I guess Anthem now, and you own Impact, and New Japan are kind of like, well, we don't really know if we want to get into bed with you guys. Like, prove to them that you want, prove to them what they'd be getting. But instead, they just dropped them, which to me
that
just
wouldn't
kind of
be a very Anthem thing to do, though, would it?
I know,
that wouldn't be,
right?
Like the story of Anthem.
But it kind of feels like they've just led them to AEW, because if you're New Japan, like AEW is the best fit, right?
Of course, it should be. I mean, the thing with AEW is that the EVPs of AEW do not have very kind things to say about New Japan and their working relationship with that company toward the end, right? So I think that's one of the biggest barriers, is that the Jacksons and Kenny Omega have spoken publicly about not being very happy toward the end of their tenure in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So they are the ones who own, or not own, but like are in charge of AEW. So that's going to be a very real barrier, right? But there's also what Chris Jericho has to say. Now I would bring up the actual interview, but I don't have it in front of me. But he basically gave an interviewer at the press conference, I think, was talking about how it makes absolute sense for AEW and New Japan to work together. Like, even though he beat Tanahashi, so like the whole thing was if Tanahashi beat Jericho, then he was like, I'm going to come after the AEW championship, right? Which would have been brilliant. I would love to see Tanahashi on Dynamite. That would be amazing. Jericho beat Tanahashi as kind of like, I think most of us expected him to do, but Jericho's like, I feel like the door should be open for a working relationship because there's so much potential to make big money and to make a huge event and to like have something feel blockbuster in this day and age when not a lot feels blockbuster, right? I think Jericho said, I didn't, you know, I haven't been on top of my game or whatever for how many years by being a stupid businessman. Like, this could make tons of money. And I agree. And I think, like, as fans, we would love to see AEW and New Japan working together because there are matches that you could make that would feel blockbuster and feel huge, and seeing some of the New Japan stars like show up on Dynamite would be brilliant. That's part of what made All In feel so special, was like, I got to see Okada wrestle live. That was so cool. And you know, like, seeing some of these guys interact with people they've worked with before, but some people that they haven't worked with before. I don't know, like, I think that there's money-making potential. I just kind of want everyone to get along and give me the best matches as a fan. And I understand that there are business there, and I understand that it's like so much politics in wrestling and so much politics between companies and like corporations who own things and whatnot, but I just want all the wrestling to be great, and I think it could be awesome.
Yeah, it just feels like kind of that's the way it should go. Like, that's, you know, AEW could do a little bit more talent, New Japan
if they want to increase their US presence, that's the way to do it. That's the biggest stage that isn't WWE.
They need a big American partner. ROH, you know, I think ROH is great for people like Dalton Castle and Joe Hendry and stuff like that, who are kind of plying the craft there. But ROH is not, like, big enough for the New Japan partnership, it feels like.
No, and ROH is really not anyone's, like, favorite at this point, right? Like, there's a lot of bullshit that goes along with ROH and Sinclair and other things. Like, I don't watch ROH. Like, some of the talent there is incredible. Like, I mean, you mentioned Joe Hendry, Dalton Castle, like, PCO is great. I love him. I think he's fantastic. Like, Tyler Bateman just signed with ROH and he's great too. But, like, as a company, they're just not my favorite. And, like, their fan base has never been really my favorite. So it's, I don't know. And they're not big. They're not growing. Like, they're tiny. They seem very small at this point, and AEW does not.
Yeah, indeed. So in terms of Wrestle Kingdom, I mean, I've only seen a couple of matches from night one. I've not really seen night two yet, but I mean, wax lyrical for you. You've seen night one and night two. What was the better night? What were your favorite matches? Like, talk me through how you felt about Wrestle Kingdom.
I would say night one was the better night overall. I had more fun watching during night one, I think partially just because I wasn't as exhausted, because by the time I got to night two, you know, like, I stayed up until about like 8:30 in the morning or something watching night one, and then like getting ready for bed and sort of like calming down after watching all the wrestling. I can't go to sleep right away, right? And then I had to like go to work and be a normal human, and then I was going on like 4 hours of sleep by the time I got to night two. So I should have gone to bed and not watched night two, but I was like, I'm up, I'll just kind of watch it for a little while, and then I got sucked in. Night one overall, I think, was definitely more fun. There's a lot more stuff that I enjoyed from night one. I really enjoyed the Jushin Thunder Liger match on night one a lot. Like, I liked the match on night two, and I understand why Hiromu was going to beat Jushin Thunder Liger. Like, he went out on his back, as kind of it seems like he should. But like, I've started calling it the Wrestle Dads match, right? Like, all of these legendary cruiserweights in New Japan history that I'm not that familiar with personally. Like, I don't know the history of Japanese wrestling at all. Like I said, I watch New Japan like once a year. I am the most casual of casual New Japan fans. But this was so great. Like, everyone looked awesome, and it was just really, really, really fun to see those interactions with all those dudes. I think my favorite match overall of both nights was Hiromu Takahashi versus Will Ospreay, because, like, A, I am 100% in love with Hiromu Takahashi, and I'm not ashamed of it. And I think they just worked together really, really well. They had awesome chemistry. I liked it better than I liked the main event, even though Okada Ibushi was also so incredible. Like, that match deserves all the praise that it's getting. But Hiromu Takahashi versus Will Ospreay, I think I was just more invested in and I cared more about who won. So, yeah, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Sonata. Really enjoyed Zack Sabre Jr. versus Sonata on night. That was on night two, I think.
Night two, because night one, Sabre was in the 8-man tag.
Yes, that's right. So, yeah, I mean, there was a lot to love on both nights. And I think the main event, I think Jericho Tanahashi was a lot of fun. And then the main event of Naito versus Okada was awesome, like really, really great, because of course it was, because they're both great. But I think the investment and like the emotion behind wanting Naito to win both belts made that one more special. Like, I would say on night two, that's the moment that really sticks out to me, is Naito winning the title. And then, of course, like Kenta coming and ruining everyone's fun because he's a dastardly, dastardly man. But also Suzuki interrupting Moxley after Moxley beats Juice Robinson was also pretty cool. Like, that was another big screaming moment, because give me Suzuki versus John Moxley. Oh my goodness, it's going to be so good. And that was another thing, talking about the relationship with AEW and New Japan, John Moxley retaining his US championship, I think, is a really interesting choice. Like, I kind of, not being familiar with the inner workings of New Japan, it just kind of seemed to me, if, as an outsider, that Juice Robinson was probably going to win the title back, because, you know, John Moxley is with AEW, and if they don't have a working relationship, then it seems weird for John Moxley, a contracted AEW performer, to hold a championship in their company. But him retaining and him still being the US champion seems like maybe there's a little bit of a door that could be opened. Maybe I'm grasping at straws. I could be totally incorrect here.
I think it's a good sign for sure. I mean, like, Moxley and Jericho are, they're smart enough that they got put into their deals that they can still do this stuff. And, you know, Jericho is right when he said on the interview, I think Jim Valley it was that spoke to him from The Observer. But he, when he spoke to him and said that whole, you know, the Forbidden Door and all that that you were talking about, I feel like with that, he just, it makes sense. Like, Jericho, if you watch the clip of him talking at the press conference, he's like, he basically is kind of looking as if to say, why are they not just doing it? Do you know what I mean? I think that's kind of how everybody feels.
Well, I think they're not doing it probably because ego and hurt feelings. But if they can get over ego and hurt feelings, then that would be it. And I get it too.
But, you know,
at the same time, there's so much money.
Yeah. Well, because also the other thing is, like, with AEW, one of the great things about them is their schedule, but it's one day a week. And if New Japan are going to come in and do tours, I mean, there's lots of people. I mean, we'll be talking about the AEW show in a bit. But Nyla Rose spent a month in Japan when she had her suspension. And
yeah, was she working with Stardom again?
I think it was Stardom, yeah. But like, I think you could see the difference in her being over there. So like, if you have like younger or greener guys and girls, like, you could send them over there. Or they could do the New Japan US shows. I feel like there's a lot of pros to the deal, and the cons were just going to be letting go stuff that you might personally just not be happy. Like, I've worked with people before where I, like, personally was not a big fan, but, like, professionally, I'll just, like, put the face on and, you know, do it because it makes sense and it makes money. So I guess we'll see. I mean, with Moxley still being the US champ and Jericho not really looking like he's going anywhere, I've got to think that's a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and I'm hoping that these signs do lead to something, and it seems like they will, because, like, for a little while, it kind of seemed like AEW and New Japan, like, I didn't really see much hope of them working together, but New Japan doesn't seem to have much of a relationship with Ring of Honor anymore, and nor should they, really, because what benefit does that give them? Like, none. So yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. And I don't know, for me, it's kind of fun sometimes to step outside of the promotions that I normally watch and get to just watch something that's fun, that isn't work, which, you know, like, I mean, obviously we're talking about this on the podcast, but I wasn't watching the show going, okay, I need to analyze this and I need to think about all the moving pieces and I need to, like, remember this for next week. Sometimes it's really fun to just enjoy the wrestling. Like, I lost my mind when Hiromu Takahashi busted out a new finisher so that he could beat Will Ospreay, because that's one of my favorite things in wrestling, is when someone takes you to your limit and you have to bust out a new finisher and then I get to scream about it online. Like, I love that stuff. Wrestling's the coolest, man.
Well, the good thing about New Japan is that it's most of it is matches. And the angles can take place within the matches, but there's not really, like, we're not deciphering backstage segments or, like, anything like that. It's more just, like, the wrestling. And I wasn't expecting to enjoy Takahashi and Ospreay as much as I did. I think that it helped for me that it wasn't like 40 minutes. Like I enjoyed Okada and Ibushi, but like I could easily shave at least 10 minutes off of that. Like, no problem.
I would like Ibushi to not land on his head so much.
Yeah, I mean, I like, imagine if like you were like going out with Kota Ibushi, or like he was like your brother, or he was your son, or whatever. Like, watching his matches, I can't even imagine how. I mean, me watching them, and I'm not, you know, in his life, I'm like, oh my god, it's so tense sometimes watching him. He just goes balls.
Like, there's that one bit where he just flips back onto his head intentionally, and like Okada's just kind of standing there. He didn't do that. Like, that's just Ibushi jumping onto his head. It's like he seems determined to explode his neck. Like, I'm watching Ibushi wrestle, I think especially during Ibushi Okada, like, I'm watching this and he's reminding me of the fish that I had that not only tried to jump out of his own tank and commit suicide in all sorts of ways, but also ate his own tail and still managed to live for 2.5 years and be beautiful. Like, I don't understand.
I mean, that's a whole lot of stuff we could unpack on a different episode of Sondra's animals who tried to kill themselves. But do you know,
just Manel, he was nuts.
I really want to. I do want to say about night one. I did get a chance to see. I don't know if it was night one or night two, because I saw this on like a clip form on Twitter. But the whole Moxley and Suzuki
Moxley
thing.
And Archer.
No, Moxley and Suzuki.
Oh, the Suzuki, that was on night two. It was so cool.
Yeah, so I saw the clip of that online. I was like, "That's I will seek out that match when it happens." Like, I won't really seek out anything else throughout the year, but like, I will seek that match out because I want to see Suzuki and Moxley, because the dynamic just seems great.
It does seem great. Like, I mean, I watched that match and I like Moxley, but I'm a big Juice Robinson fan, right? Like, I love Juice Robinson. I love his porn stash. I love his new haircut. I love the fact that he glued dollar store items to a hat. Just everything about Juice Robinson I absolutely adore. And so I was actually kind of bummed that Juice Robinson didn't beat Jon Moxley. And I was like, you know, kind of wallowing that a little bit. And then Suzuki happened. And I was like, oh boy, like, never mind. I'm not disappointed anymore. I am so here for like Murder Dad versus Jon Moxley. It's going to be incredible.
It's going to be great. The only thing that, and also I've not watched night two yet, and I'm going to watch the Liger retirement match. I just feel like the Liger retirement, I know that the whole idea is that he's doing, you know, the eight mans, or he's doing the six man, and or the tag team match in the second night, but it just feels very underwhelming as an end for him. And like, I remember, was it maybe 6 months ago that we were seeing the clips online of him and Suzuki? There was the whole thing about he took his mask off and he had the mist and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And in my head, I'm going, that would have been such a cool ending for Liger. And I can't help but, I mean, I don't think it's like Kurt Angle, Baron Corbin WrestleMania levels.
No.
But like, for me, who's not even a huge Jushin Thunder Liger guy, like, I just felt very underwhelmed by the way that he went out.
I guess I wasn't underwhelmed, I guess, just because like seeing all of the love for Liger and having him retire in the Tokyo Dome at Wrestle Kingdom, I think is very cool. And I think that all of the love being shown to Liger over the, like, the past weekend has been amazing to see. I think it was Gran Akuma tweeted something like, Liger is universally loved. Like, there's nobody saying anything bad about Jushin Thunder Liger. And like, so many people from different aspects of wrestling have come out saying like, I got to see Jushin Liger live and it was this great moment in my career. And like, I got to meet Jushin Thunder Liger and he was just amazing. Like, the love being shown to him is really special. And I think that kind of proves how important he was to wrestling and how integral he was to wrestling. And so like, that kind of thing has not made me feel underwhelmed about it, but it does seem a little like you wish he would have like one big barn burner match. But I think like the Wrestle Dads match from night one, I really, really loved. Like, I liked it better than the tag match on night two. So I would almost suggest you watch that instead.
I feel like
the tag match on night two.
I feel like I'm going to watch the tag match on night two. And then if I am underwhelmed by that, I'll probably just switch back to night one and watch the other one, which I'll probably end up doing.
Yeah, I mean, like, all the stuff with Hiromu and Jushin Liger was, I liked that stuff. Like, I don't think it was a bad match or anything like that. Like, there wasn't a bad match on the show. But it was kind of, it was sad. And because I'm such a Hiromu Takahashi fan, like, I was really pleased for Hiromu that he got to do it. Like, there's a moment, you'll see it when you watch the match, but when Jushin Thunder Liger is making his entrance, it pans to Hiromu's face, and he just, like, he's biting his lip, and he's just so excited that he gets to be part of it. And I thought that was lovely.
Yeah, no, that is a cool element to it. But I will be... So I'll be watching the top match from night two, and I will talk with Finn in a couple of days about them. We should mention as well that I don't know whether you've seen it or not. You don't really have to have seen it, to be honest. But we got three returns on SmackDown a couple of nights ago. We got Sheamus beating up Chad Gable. We got the Usos saving Roman Reigns. And we got John Morrison appearing from the Miz's locker room. Do any of those returns interest you in any way? Is there any of them that you are happy to see them back or excited to see what they do? Do any of them, as my mum used to say when I was young, grab your vitals?
I don't know if any of them are grabbing my vitals, because it's very difficult for anything in WWE to grab my vitals on a regular basis. But I mean, I'm pleased to see Sheamus back, I suppose. He's the one that I knew about because I'd seen screen caps of him existing. So I hope that his neck is okay. And if his neck is okay and he can wrestle, then I think that's great. Like, I really like Sheamus as a performer. I think he's awesome. Him beating up Chad Gable makes me a little sad. Was he a heel or a babyface when he came back and beat up my beloved Chad Gable? He was a heel. Okay, that helps. Because if he was a babyface and just attacked my man, I would not feel great about that. So, you know, I think Sheamus can definitely be a useful part of the show, for sure. Like, I like Sheamus a lot, and I think he is better as a heel than he is as a babyface. John Morrison coming back and being... Is he aligned with The Miz? How did John Morrison come back? Because I heard some people were underwhelmed, but I couldn't be bothered to actually seek it out.
So, basically, Miz turned heel on the show. Wait, thank God. Miz turned heel on the
show. Well, that's good.
Miz turned heel on the show after he lost to Kofi Kingston. And then later on in the show, whoever the interviewer was, can't remember who the interviewer was, but somebody had basically tried to get a word with Miz backstage. And then it was John Morrison who came out of the Miz's locker room to sort of speak on his behalf. And he just told I think it was Kathy Kelly, and told her that Miz didn't have anything else to say tonight. And that was kind of the end of it.
I'm here for it, honestly. Like, Miz and Morrison back together? Give me more dirt sheet.
Well, I mean, I know some people are kind of a bit underwhelmed about it, but, like, I mean, Miz and Morrison as a heel tag team against the New Day, I'm kind of into.
I feel like The Miz works so well with other people. Like, The Miz is always great, right? Like, well, I say always great. Sometimes his babyface stuff is quite cringe.
Whenever he has someone with him, a Sandow, Axel, and Dallas, like, whenever he's with someone and he's bouncing off them, it tends to be really good.
He made Alex Riley seem interesting. And he's Alex never, Riley.
And he's never been interesting since?
No, not at all. So... I believe in the magic of The Miz, and I think that Miz and Morrison have obviously worked together in the past. I think it makes sense to bring in Morrison having an alliance with The Miz, because obviously they have had an alliance in the past. And I'm trying to remember when John Morrison left. I don't know if he and Miz were kind of in the same circles at all. Like, I know John Morrison was feuding with R-Truth about smoking, and that's kind of what started R-Truth's, like, descent into madness and creating Little Jimmy. And that was, like, near-ish Awesome Truth time. I can't really remember. There's a lot that happened during that year. But I don't know. I like it. And I think John Morrison is another guy. Like, he is so talented. And I think he's done so much since he left WWE. Like, I really loved him on Lucha Underground. I thought he was phenomenal on Lucha Underground. And him kind of taking the independent world and the, you know, smaller company world, you know, being Johnny Impact and being Johnny Blackcraft and being Johnny whoever for so many years. I think he's a very different performer than he was when he left WWE. Was that 2011 that he left?
He left in 2011, yeah.
In 2011, okay. So, yeah, like, he's grown and changed, and I think gotten so much better as a performer. And he was good in WWE, but, like, I don't know. I think he could be a top-level guy, and he has a lot of name value. So I am pleased to see him back. And I guess the Usos are happening. That's cool.
they're happening. I like the Morrison thing. I also, and because we don't praise them very often, but, like, I do think one thing that WWE should be praised for is that, like, the idea that anytime The Fiend has gotten his hands on someone so far, they have experienced visceral change
in their personality. Yeah, that's cool.
Like, all three of them, you know, Seth Rollins, The Miz, and Daniel Bryan, they have all completely changed because the idea that The Fiend just, you know, messed with their heads so much. So I think that's a really good story that they're telling.
I love it. I think it's great. I don't know how long you can keep that up and maintain it being interesting, but I think all of The Fiend's feuds have been so different from one another that there's still juice left in it, for sure. And I really like it. I think that's a good point to bring up.
So, yeah, basically that's kind of where we are with WWE. We should mention that NXT did a taped show on Wednesday. I feel like, and this is not a go at NXT, just in general, I feel like by 2020, there's no real excuse for putting on a recap show. Really, in any way. Especially from
WWE. I think
WWE.
It's just to fill time.
But, like, film some matches somewhere. You film multiple TVs every single week. Like, it's just, like, it's so lazy. So, I mean, I didn't watch the episode because I'm just, you know, there's so much wrestling to watch anyway that if you're going to watch stuff, why would you just watch a recap show?
It was basically a recap show and then also the NXT Awards, right?
Yes, exactly. But they
did we want to talk about any of the awards that I definitely don't have pulled up on my phone?
I didn't even take note, but let me do it. NXT Awards. Let's find out who won what.
Because I think Undisputed Era won Best Tag Team.
So we have
that happening.
Here we go. We have Male Competitor of the Year, Adam Cole. Female Competitor of the Year, Shayna Baszler. Tag Team of the Year, Undisputed Era. Overall Competitor of the Year, Adam Cole. Rivalry of the Year, Johnny Gargano versus Adam Cole. Breakout Star of the Year, Keith Lee. Future Star of NXT, Dakota Kai. Takeover of the Year, War Games. Right.
A strong disagree.
All with the jokes. Match of the Year, Gargano and Cole, 2 out of 3 falls.
You liked that one more than you liked their other matches.
I did, but okay, so let me read through the other people in the category of Match of the Year, and I'll tell you which ones I liked better than any of the Gargano and Cole matches. Women's War Games, liked it better. Walter and Tyler Bate.
You liked the Women's War Games better?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Walter, Tyler Bate, no. Shayna Baszler, Io Shirai in the cage. Yep, like that better. Cancer, Io Shirai, Takeover Toronto. Like that better. The 2 out of 3 falls match at Takeover Toronto. No, because I like the New York one more. Undisputed Era versus the Viking Raiders. No. The Fatal 4-Way Ladder Match with the Street Profits, Forgotten Sons, Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan, the Undisputed Era. I like that one more. Adam Cole, Pete Dunne, no. Keith Lee, Dominik Dijakovic, no. The number one contendership match in September between Mia Yim, Io Shirai, Bianca Belair, and Candice LeRae. I don't remember that specifically, so that's probably not a great sign. And then Grizzled Young Veterans against Flash Morgan, Webster, Mark Andrews, and Gallus. Way better match to me.
That match was awesome.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like there's just the only reason I kind of make a noise is because there's at least, like, 4 matches that are also in the category that I think would be more of a match of the year for me.
I mean, to be fair, like, you're just not into the Johnny Cole thing. The Johnny Gargano, Adam Cole.
Yeah,
exactly. Those dudes. You're not really into those dudes fighting, so I can see why it wouldn't be match of the year for you. I think for a lot of people, it makes sense that it is. I would pick Candice and Io over that, and I would pick that. Triple threat tag match, the NXT UK one. Like, that's one of the few NXT UK matches I watched this year because people told me it was so good and I had to check it out, and they were correct.
Mm-hmm. It was great. I think again, you know, the Gargano Cole thing, at least I am consistent, if not annoying, is it comes down to, again, so much time. And I just, mm-hmm. it's not my jam. Like, it takes a lot for me to want to see two people for, like, the better part of an hour. So
yeah, it's never going to be for you. I think Breakout Star of the Year, like, Keith Lee and Rhea Ripley just seem so on par with one another, and I think I might have chosen Rhea, even though, you know, I'm a huge Keith Lee fan.
Rhea's not
well.
Even in the cat. Oh, no, she was in the category, yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's definitely in the conversation. I think most of them make sense. I like Adam Cole has, like, 5 awards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of fun.
I mean, NXT is kind of the Undisputed Era show, But I mean, it's a lot less egregious than like when we're talking about DX on Retro Raw, because Undisputed Era are actually good.
I don't know how anyone on Earth can believe that TakeOver War Games was the best one of the year.
I don't understand that at all. At all. Like, even if you're a fan of War Games as a concept, which clearly I am not, which is why, like, the women's War Games match, even though there were so many good things about it, I still would take Johnny Gargano and Adam Cole over women's War Games because it's War Games, and I can't. But even if you like War Games as a concept, that TakeOver was, eh? Like, the men's War Games match was, like, you know, full of crazy spots and stuff, but was it really that interesting? Was it better than, like, any of the other TakeOvers? No.
Yeah, it just does. I mean, because even the UK TakeOvers are in the category, and I'm not even, like, shitting on War Games. I just genuinely don't think that War Games is anywhere near the best one of the year.
No, I don't think it was.
So, it was, before we talk about AEW, is there anything else that you wanted to bring up here on the main podcast?
I don't know if there's anything else I wanted to bring up here on the main podcast, because right now I'm not remembering what else happened.
How did you spend your New Year?
Oh, the wedding. We haven't talked about the wedding.
The wedding, and then we'll do AEW.
Yeah. Let's do that. I mean, my New Year, I worked and then went home, and that was it.
We come here for those kind of stories.
Sorry, it's not that exciting. I worked until 11, so there wasn't really that much to go out and celebrate, I suppose. It was fine. I drank a bottle of champagne.
Steve Gunn and I had some pizza, so it was, we were about as rock and roll as you.
You watched the wedding, right? Didn't you watch that on New Year's Eve?
We did watch that for the last half hour of the decade. So let's talk about the wedding. Lana and Bobby Lashley, Rusev in the end, coming at the cake. Three interruptions from Lana's ex-husband, Rusev's ex-wife, inverted commas, and Liv Morgan. Somebody had tweeted me and said, this is going to be everything that you love and hate about pro wrestling in one go. What did you think of it?
I mean, accurate. The thing is, it's absolute trash, right? Like, it's absolute trash.
Which
we're here for. Like, I was enjoying the trash of it all. Why were there chairs set up on the stage and no one was sitting in them? I don't know. Because wrestling. Why
is Bobby Lashley in a sleeveless tux? Because he's Bobby Lashley.
Why is Bobby Lashley in a sleeveless tux with no shirt on underneath?
Where were his sisters? Because he's Bobby Lashley.
And because wrestling. Why was Bobby Lashley wearing so much makeup that got all over Lana's face and was the most hilarious thing to me? Where are his sisters? His sisters should have been sitting in those chairs, but no one was.
Kathy with the cum rag, where was she?
I'm just saying. So there were a lot of inconsistencies, which we're here for, right? Like, I mean, wrestling weddings are always going to be shenanigans filled. Lana was very irritating during the wedding, and she was supposed to be, right? Like, I didn't watch the rest of Raw, because I actually watched this wedding live as it happened. So there was no chance of spoilers. Mm-hmm. There was no, like, there were no preconceptions, nothing. I got home from work at 10:30 and was like, fuck it. I'm going to turn on Raw because the wedding is happening. So yeah, weddings pop ratings. They do, because they're trash and people tune in for them. It doesn't build, like, long-standing ratings or good storytelling potential for the future. But hey, they're trash and we're here for it. I think it went on too long. Like, I think the segment could have been shorter, because Lana being very irritating worked for me. Like, I wanted to see her face get smashed into a cake by the end, because she just kept being like, Lana, 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 it's all about me. And, like, doing it way not as well as Emma did when it was all about Emma. So, like, some of that stuff was, you know, and, like, her writing Bobby Lashley's vows for him and him just being like, I'm so excited that I get to marry you. Like, Bobby Lashley is as wooden as a plank. Like, he's so dull and is not reacting to any of this. He's just like, yes, I have Lana and I am so happy about it. And she's like, I'm the greatest gift that anyone could ever get, blah, blah, blah. And, like, interrupting the minister and all that kind of stuff. She's just a prick. And I wanted to see her get beaten up. And so, I mean, it made me hate her, which was helpful, but I think it did go on too long. I think having so many interruptions. Like, I get what they were doing, having Lana's, you know, first husband interrupt, and like they're trying to be shocking, saying like, and then she left me for that son of a bitch Rusev, and then she left that son of a bitch for you, another son of a bitch. And I'm saying son of a bitch because I'm hashtag edgy. Whatever, fine. Lana's a terrible person, we get it. Bobby Lashley's first wife interrupting, and like all of that just seemed to go on a little bit too long. Like, if they would have made it a little snappier, I would have enjoyed it more. I mean, the Liv Morgan interruption is the one everyone wants us to talk about, and I think the first two interruptions were a swerve, because you can't possibly have a woman who's in love with another woman, except it's the year 2019 and you totally can, so it wasn't a surprise and no one cared.
Yeah, like, I watched it again the other day because I knew we were going to be talking about it, and I wanted to, like, just watch it a second time. I'm not annoyed about it, and I'm not upset about it. I just think that, like, it went on too long. I'm not going to slate it because I was here for watching it, and, like, Ollie texted me and he was like, I loved the wedding, and I was like, I loved watching it as well, in a weird car crash kind of way. And like,
I loved it until Liv Morgan. I have thoughts, but go on.
But you can't, like, you know, I can't, well, for me, I can't be, like, you know, bestowing what I liked about the Attitude Era and then be annoyed when they do something Attitude Era-esque. So, in that sense, I get it, and I thought it was fun. The problem with the Liv Morgan thing is that I feel like they just don't understand the, like, When I was like 17 in 2002, when I was at school, you did not see openly gay or bi people whatsoever. So angles back then could have maybe worked that way. Now I would imagine that like most people who are like 18 years old, who if they go to uni or they go to college, they go to school, whatever they go to, like gay and bi people are around all the time. Like it's not new. It's not like, it's not in any way sort of like a shock value anymore. And then, like, when people thought they were lesbians, they cheered. And then when they weren't lesbians, they booed. So, really...
I thought they were in a relationship. I thought they were just fighting because they were, like, ex-lovers.
Well, nobody knows, because it's not come out yet. But Liv's saying they were in a relationship. But the whole thing was, like, what really would have been better was if Lana and Liv had just made out and left together. That would have been better. But the whole, like, we're going to make out she's a lesbian and then just have them brawl... It just felt like it was like a 2002-esque thing. And again, it's like, I just don't think that they are tapping into... It's funny, Cody Rhodes said something today on Twitter about somebody had tweeted him about the Russo thing and be like, you know, oh, you should listen to Vince Russo. He's got all these ideas, whatever. And I know. So, and the guy was kind of being like, you know, I just think that if you had Russo on board, you know, you guys would be able to, you know, go so much further and da-da-da. And Cody was very nice about it. And he was like, you know, you don't need to tag me in this stuff, but thank you. But then here's what he said. He said, the guy had said to Cody, appreciate your polite response, but needed you to see this. Someone who has been there and done that and had some advice for you. I think he has some great ideas, which would help. I did my part to get the message across. Your call whether you want it or not. Good day. And what Cody said back was, my mind and heart is always open, but I'm happy with our current team, young, ear to the ground in modern society and watching today's product. The key there is ear to the ground on modern society. I don't think the Liv Morgan interruption had the ear to the ground of the modern society. And if you want to pull in the demos of 18 to 49, which is the marketable demos that everybody wants and that make the most money from advertisers, you're not going to do it by pulling out a 1998 lesbian, fake lesbian angle. Because not that people are offended, but they're just like, it doesn't make any sense. So
that... No, it doesn't make any sense because it's anticlimactic. And that's what bothered me. I know that you're not one to talk much about like representation in wrestling and all that kind of stuff. But here I am to talk about representation in wrestling and all that stuff, because that's what I talk about. So the reason this bothered me so much is like, A, it wasn't very good. Like, it wasn't executed very well. I thought Liv Morgan was an atrocious actress here. And I think I've seen her be a better performer in like many other circumstances. This wasn't it. She comes out and she's just like, I'm so upset because the love of my life is standing in that ring before me. And the thing is, as soon as she said that, I was like, oh, she had an affair with Lana. First thing that went through my mind. Again, I watched this live as it happened. Like, I wasn't spoiled on it. I didn't have any indication that that's where this was going. It just seemed so obvious to me. As soon as she didn't say he, or as soon as she didn't say, like, Bobby or whatever, I was like, oh, they're setting it up for a big reveal that she's with Lana, which didn't seem like a big reveal at all, right? Because then, you know, I think they did kind of keep the camera on Bobby Lashley, like trying to indicate that it was Bobby Lashley that she was with, because of course it must have been, because he's a man. And then when it was like, I'm not talking about Bobby, I'm talking about Lana. And I don't feel like I'm over-exaggerating her inflection here. Like, it was so poorly delivered. It was so telenovela. And like, if you're trying to be over the top in telenovela, then that's fine. But it just, the big reveal being so shocking, I think they expected that moment and that emotional crescendo to be this moment where the crowd popped and gasped and was like, oh my goodness, I did not expect this big reveal that two women could possibly be in love. But like, of course two women could possibly be in love. That happens all the time. You have a wrestler on this show named Sonya Deville, who's, I mean, I think, is she on SmackDown or Raw? I can't remember.
She's on SmackDown.
Okay, but like, in your company, you have a wrestler who's been pushing for like an LGBT storyline because she's actually gay. And now you're just making us a punchline? Like, that bothers me. Even the conversation around this, like, even everyone saying that it was a lesbian love angle. Lana has expressed sexual interest in many men on this program. She was with Dolph Ziggler. She's been with Alexander Rusev. She's been with Bobby Lashley. Like, Lana's not a lesbian, y'all. Like, bisexuality exists. So that's part of the issue that I have with it, too, is everyone's just like, oh my gosh, is Lana a lesbian? Is Liv a lesbian? Da, 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 da. And it's like, they could be bi. That's a real thing. And no one's even considering that that's even a possibility. And it just makes me want to ram my head into a wall, because we should be so far beyond this. And I really just don't appreciate the first LGBT storyline being introduced into WWE as a punchline for shock value, like we're some sort of like sideshow freak act or something. It bothered me. It bothered me a lot. And then the rest of the wedding just was a shambles, right? Like, the catfight with Lana and Liv Morgan was terrible. Neither one of them looked like they knew how to fight at all, and they are trained professional wrestlers. Alexander Rusev got stuck in the cake, which made me laugh. Like, he couldn't get out of the cake, and it got stuck on his head, and just, I don't know. The whole thing was such a clusterfuck. What really bothered me after Liv's interruption, and how you can tell that they were expecting this to be like some sort of shock value thing, and that that's going to be the headline, is like, oh my goodness, two women might be fucking, is the minister's reaction bothered me even more than the interruption itself, because he was just like, and I mean, this is how the guy was scripted. I don't blame him.
He was great, to be fair.
He was great at his performance, but
his acting ability was brilliant.
His acting ability was brilliant, but what bugged me is he's just like, oh my goodness, you're with her? Oh no. What can I do? What can I possibly do to react to the situation? Okay, let's just get this over with. Man? Yeah? And he points at Bobby Lashley. Woman? Yeah? And he points at Lana. He's like, and I'm like, what is this? What even is happening? Like, are we still that far entrenched in these ridiculous gender roles on this program that, like, you can't even handle the fact that Lana might have dated Liv Morgan for a hot second? Like, I don't know. The whole thing bugged me. It turned me off from it. I didn't enjoy it after the interruption, because like, if like you say, if the story would have been Liv Morgan came out and said, the love of my life is standing in that ring, Lana, we have something really special, come away with me. And like, we know Lana's a flaky, terrible person, right? Like, she's all about herself. She doesn't care about other people. So she's like, oh, well, maybe I can be happier with Liv Morgan than with Bobby Lashley. See ya, Bobby Lashley. I don't care about you. I'm going to go and be with Liv Morgan. Fine. Totally cool. But like, the fact that it was such a like punchline for shock value just bothered me.
And that's fair. You know, for me, like, and I'm not saying you're right or wrong, it's that's how you feel. I mean, I don't need or look for my validation in a wrestling show about me or what I am or whatever. So it doesn't, that stuff doesn't really ever bother me. How I feel more about it is that I'm more just like, I'm not offended, I'm not annoyed. I'm just like, it's just another example of how you're not understanding what society is like now. Because what society, like, I feel like most people who are watching this would just be kind of like so underwhelmed at the idea that somehow that Lana fucked a woman would be shocking. Like, I will give
props to the crowd actually for not reacting with shock and horror.
Like, I mean,
would have happened in 1999, can you imagine?
The thing is, though, the thing that the thing that women have over guys more is that I think that women being bi or gay on TV is more popular because
it's a
women.
Sexual fantasy of men.
Whereas men, it's like, if you, I mean, if you, I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where like two guys can just like make out in a wrestling ring and it'll be the big babyface moment. I mean, I actually still do think the Billy and Chuck one would have worked if they had like, I mean, not been like full, you know, like jump at each other, but I think if they had done it, I think it would have still got a pop because people were into it, and they were never the same after that. But I mean, how they follow up tomorrow is going to be kind of interesting. But again, it's just, the thing is, if you want to get people to watch your show, then I think that what this did for me was this didn't, it, not in an offensive way, it just made me more think, oh, you really don't get society now. Like, you don't really, you just don't get it. You don't get what the world is now. And when you see people that don't really get it, then you end up just kind of tuning out. And I think that's what's going to happen. It did great numbers. It was going to do great numbers. I said with Finn, I actually have come round to Lana a bit, which makes my skin crawl. But
I think her performance here was good.
I do.
Other than the cat fight, that was atrocious.
I do think there is some money in like putting one of the belts on her and giving her a bodyguard, and like having her be like, you know, she always manages to get, you know, to keep the belt or whatever, because I think those stories can be fun, but you need to find the right person to do that with.
But which belt? I mean, like, you're gonna take the belt off Becky Lynch and give it to Lana?
No, I'm saying I'm saying, you know, put it on SmackDown, the draft in April or something, do it there or something. Like,
are they gonna have another draft in April?
I think so. But I think that because I assume what they're going to do now is, because Lana, look, she can say she did draw ratings. I don't know how you keep it up. Rusev not being able to get the cake was ridiculous. My favourite line from the whole wedding was after Lashley and Lana make out and the pastor said with full deadpan, "Thank you, Bobby, for your restraint." It was amazing.
I mean, my favourite part, like, I thought, because I was watching it on my phone, because I can log into the Xfinity stream thing on my phone, and illegal means weren't working so well on my TV. So I was watching it on my phone, and after Bobby and Lana make out and his makeup is all over her face, I thought it was like my phone glitching or something until I saw people start to tweet about it. And my favorite tweet of the night was from Montez Ford, who just said, "Lana kissed the black off Bobby Lashley." It was incredible. It was such a shambles. And, like, I'm here for a shambles segment. Like, I wish they hadn't ruined the trash wedding with, like, I don't know, shit that made me mad. And that apparently made Sonya Deville mad, too, because she tweeted about it, was just like, I have no words.
I mean, the thing with Sonya Deville is that it's difficult, right? Because I've seen Sonya in Total Divas. I am not fully convinced that Sonya Deville is ready for, like, a massive storyline. But, like, the way to figure that out is to put her in some and see how she does, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, build it up. It must be tough if you're you know, a lesbian on a TV show and or if you're a lesbian athlete and they do a kind of semi-lesbian storyline. I mean, look, let's see how it pans out, because next week Sonya Deville might see it and go, I'm glad I wasn't Liv Morgan in this situation, depending where it goes. But the thing is, you can't every week be touting that we're this mad, inclusive, like, everybody, blah, blah, blah thing, and then, I mean, it's a bad sign when you've got your own roster kind of, like, slating on social media, because they're not involved.
And CM Punk, I think, had a really, a well-said tweet where he said something like, maybe if you're going to do angles of representation, like, maybe consult people who are in those groups.
Yeah, and I mean, this is probably not really a popular opinion. I think there is a danger in playing to outrage that can happen, because I think that right now, because as a society, we are very woke to stuff, as we should be. But I think, so I don't think you should automatically make sure that you don't say anything that could be construed as not being completely of the times. But you can still be, I think that there's a way to do it where you're still like CM Punk saying, like, have people writing who are, like, in the world in 2020. They're, like, in the real world, in the 18 to 49 demographic. Like, mm-hmm. they go to the movies on a Saturday night, or they go to a pub, or they go to clubs, and they know what's happening. Do you know what I mean? Not somebody who, like, what is Bruce Pritchard? No offense to Bruce Pritchard. What is Bruce Pritchard or I mean, Paul Heyman's better, but even then, I mean, this
Paul
sounds...
Heyman's better, but Paul Heyman also comes with the baggage of like being Paul Heyman. I mean, he's the guy who, you know,
this was a Paul Heyman segment.
This was 100% a Paul Heyman segment. And you know, like, I love Paul Heyman. I think he's great. I'm a big Paul Heyman fan, but I think that Paul Heyman also does bring a lot of trash to television. Because also, like, the previous stuff with, like, Mike and Maria, right? And Maria being like, you couldn't father my baby because you're not man enough. Like, that's also pure Paul Heyman. And that's the kind of stuff that I am not a fan of, right? Like, obviously, I'm not a huge fan of that sort of thing. So... like, am I here for some trash in wrestling? Yeah, but, like, this just, I don't know. Like, Paul Heyman has a tendency to play women for shock value more than I care for.
I mean, I guess if you've been doing something in creative for, like, 20 years, it's very difficult for you to not play to some lazy tropes that you've had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is a difficult thing to do. But I think I do wonder.
I mean, the crowd was chanting Jerry. Like, this was obviously meant to be like a Jerry Springer like segment, and it was.
It was. So I mean, do you think that you will seek out what the follow up is? Have they got you to a level of interest where you want to see what the follow up is, or did they just turn you off to the degree that you just aren't interested?
I mean, like, I'll probably read Raw results for tomorrow night. It's Sunday right now, right? Yeah. Can't remember what day it is. Like I said, pretty tired. Like, I'll read the Raw results and I'll probably look at Twitter, but I'm not gonna be like clamoring to get to WWE's YouTube channel after I get home from work.
Well, we will probably.
I just don't care. Like, I don't trust them to do this in any sort of way that's going to be interesting or feel even remotely authentic. Like, I haven't felt like Lana and Bobby Lashley was an authentic relationship. I trust more that Lana and Liv Morgan were in a relationship because I know they've been pals. But, like, I don't know. I guess I just don't care that much.
Okay, so AEW, they had their show on New Year's Day, their live show. They ended up getting 967,000 viewers to NXT's 580,000. Something. I mean, obviously, the real number will be this week when they're back to being live together. But it was a good number.
I mean, NXT, like we said, was a recap show with awards and like the revelation of the Dusty Classic brackets.
Yeah, but what did you think of the AEW show this week overall?
It was fine. It was fun.
I thought they did a really good job, kind of listening to fan criticism. They toned the Dark Order stuff way down, which is good. But they kept something in, so like if you like Dark Order, then you still got a vignette from them. They had the Elite win some stuff. I thought it was the best women's match they've had in a long time.
I liked that match. I thought that was quite good.
So yeah, well, let's kind of go through it. So we got Cody versus Darby Allin. Cody's now got Arn Anderson as like the nightmare coach. I actually really loved Arn getting on the apron and signaling to Cody to bring up the knees from when Darby came down, and Cody got the win. But I thought Cody and Darby was great, a really good opener, and I'm really digging Darby Allin.
I love Darby Allin. Like, I think this was probably my favorite thing on the show. I was surprised that it opened. But I loved Cody versus Darby Allin. And I think there's a drama with the two of them, right? Because they went to a 20-minute time limit draw before. So now it's like, this is also a 20-minute time limit match. Are they going to go to another draw? Is one of them going to be able to win? Like, I believed that Darby Allin could have beaten Cody this time because they went to a draw before. Whereas when Cody and Darby Allin had their first match at whatever pay-per-view that was, it seemed like everybody underestimated Darby Allin, and it was like, there's no way he's going to beat Cody. Like, obviously Cody's going to win because he's Cody. And it was odd watching this because this is the first time I found myself not cheering for Cody Rhodes. Like, I was actually cheering for Darby Allin to beat him. And the crowd was still way behind Cody. The crowd still loves Cody, and I still love Cody. I still think Cody's great, but I really like Darby Allin. There's something about him that's just awesome. Like, he's so good, and I want to see more of him. And it feels like these matches with Cody and, like, Darby Allin keeps losing and he keeps feeling like a bigger deal every time he loses to someone. Like, Darby Allin versus Chris Jericho was great. Darby Allin versus Cody here was great. I want to see more of Darby Allin, even though his record sucks and he should be nowhere near the title at this point. But, like, he's an interesting part of the show and I just like him so much. And I thought they just wrestle each other very well.
Yeah, I'd like to see Darby get some wins at some point soon. But, yeah, this was, again, just he makes himself look good in defeat. He always does when he has big matches, like does a special entrance, like he had that guy from the band with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre face from the band Ghostmane there. But what do you make of Arn Anderson with Cody? It's a bit out of left field, but I quite liked how it played into the match.
I liked how it played into the match, especially with Arn Anderson yelling that Darby Allin was going to do... Was he doing the coffin drop onto Cody and he got his knees up? I can't remember.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and I thought that was a really nice touch, and I think commentary talked about it really well. Like, I think commentary did well to explain it. Hearing Taz on commentary was odd, again. I like it. My question kind of is... They explained Arn Anderson not just as Cody's coach, but he's, like, the coach for the Nightmare family, right? Which would lead you to believe that that's Cody, Dustin, and Brandy. Like, is Arn Anderson also coaching Brandy? What's happening with her?
My hope is that we get some Arn Anderson and Awesome Kong vignettes.
I'm here for it.
We also, the Riho Hikaru Shida, Britt Baker, Nyla Rose, it might be my favourite AEW women's match. I don't know. I really loved it. I thought it was the first time I've watched an AEW women's match in a while where, like, I completely got lost in it. Because sometimes I'm going, oh god, is this going to be okay? Or are they going to be able to, like, gel together? But it just kind of worked for me.
I think the show has missed Nyla Rose. Like, Nyla Rose being away and suspended, I think, hurt the show. Because I think that she's one of the most fully formed characters in AEW's women's division, right? Like, she seems like a person, she's a big old monster, and you know who she is, and she wants to beat people up, and even though her record's not great, like, she is going to, like, kill you to get what she wants. And I love that about her. I think she's a great monster. And
actually, if you contrast it with Raw, you've got Nyla Rose, who is a person she's a trans woman, right? She's open to the fact that she is. Now, she doesn't... I remember doing an interview with her. I can't remember if you were with me or if it was somebody else, but she talked about how, like, she's proud to be a trans woman, but that's not, like, her tagline. And she doesn't want to, like...
Yeah.
That's...
Because I think you asked her about representation. She goes, wait, there are trans people here?
Yeah.
And it was really funny.
What I like about her is that I think that she kind of hits every... You know, for somebody like you who is... more about representation, I think she hits that box. I think for somebody like me who doesn't want everything to be about representation, she ticks my box. Like, she ticks a lot of boxes in the same way. And the thing that's...
Not just there because she's trans and she's ticking a box. Like, she's also a great part of the show, which is what I mean when I say I think the show missed her, because I think, like, she made this match more interesting.
She did. But what my point was going to be was that AEW have this trans woman on their roster, and it's not a gimmick, and it's not used as, like, that's why she's there. Or anything like that. It's just, she's there, and she's part of the show, and that's how you do representation. So I don't really know how that is so difficult to understand.
It shouldn't be that difficult to understand. I mean, it really shouldn't be. They're just presenting her as a big badass lady, because she's a big badass lady, and that's who she is. And kind of end of story, I suppose. Like, I don't know. I really liked her in this match, and I think that getting her out of the way for the flash pinfall for Rio to pin Britt Baker again, I thought... It played out really well. Like, it was kind of a surprise pinfall that kind of came out of nowhere, but it didn't feel rushed or anticlimactic. I do not want Rio to be champion anymore for very long. Like, I understand when Britt Baker comes up to her later and is like, you're never here and I'm here and I deserve this. And I'm like, Britt, maybe calm down. I don't know that you deserve to be the champion. I don't want a Britt Baker championship reign. I'm not, like, the hugest fan of her either. I think she's fine, but she's not, like, the greatest.
She runs a dentistry business on the side.
She does have a dentistry business on the side, and that's great for her. And that's awesome. I don't know. Like, I am not as compelled by Britt Baker in the ring or in storytelling as I am by some of the other characters. And, like, I want Chris Statlander to beat Rio next week. I really do.
I mean, the good thing about this was that they had Nyla attack Rio after the match. Now we've got Rio and Chris Statlander next week. I don't know if I want Chris Statlander to win yet, because I don't feel like I've really learned a lot about her. But she is good. I think we can all agree we don't want Britt Baker as the champion.
No.
Even her backstage thing where she came up to her, that was interesting. There was a bit of character development. So
I like that character development. Like, I think that Britt Baker, if she's involved in another story, which would require them doing other women's stories on AEW a little bit better than they have been. But I'm not saying that she doesn't belong on the show, but I think that pushing her so quickly as like championship contender and all this stuff, I think it was just too much too soon for Britt Baker. And I think she would be more effective. Like, I get the feeling that Britt Baker might be a baddie soon. And I kind of want to see baddie Britt Baker.
Well, the good thing is that we're sitting here now, whereas the conversation we would have 3 weeks ago was kind of like the throwaway women's match that we would just kind of get through and move on to the more interesting stuff. Whereas now we're like, well, Rio's the champion, but Britt Baker's angry at her for what she did, and then Nyla attacked after the match, but then Statlander's got the shot next week. And there's all this stuff going on, and it's all kind of interesting. So it's they've listened to some of the critiques that we've had about the show, and they've improved it. So props to them.
Yeah, it's good. And I mean, like, having this four-way, I didn't expect anyone to beat Rio for the championship here, especially with the Chris Statlander match happening next week because of her prior commitments. So, like, the outcome seemed obvious, but I think they still did it in a really interesting way.
We got a segment backstage where Joey Janela was getting interviewed, and basically Penelope Ford came up and low-blowed him from behind, and then Penelope and Kip Sabian walked away. How do you feel about, obviously, in real life, Penelope Ford and Joey Janela are a couple. Penelope Ford left Joey Janela and she's now with Kip Sabian, and it's now been turned into an angle. It's played out a little bit on Twitter in the most sophomoric way you can play anything out, but, you know.
Oh, really? I haven't really seen their Twitters.
Where, like, Joey Janela's like, what was the... Let me just try and find it here. Joey Janela, Kip Sabian, Twitter...
I will say this segment, like, if I didn't know the history between Penelope Ford and Joey Janela, I would have been kind of confused by this. I don't think commentary did a great job of explaining much of what's happening. It's like, oh no, Penelope Ford is bad.
Okay, here's the interaction. So Joey Janela responded, I guess, to this segment saying, "Hey Penelope, if you wanted to touch my penis again, all you had to do was ask." And then she replied saying, "I'm surprised I could even find it. Now, Kip Sabian's is so much easier to place." And then he said, "Hey now, calm down, Tammy. This penis got you a contract." And then Kip came in on Penelope's account and said, "Hey champ, Kip here. Sorry, but Penelope can't make it to the phone right now. Her hands are full. So is her mouth, if we're being honest. Hope your mom's making something nice for dinner. Remember to eat your vegetables." And then Janela said, "Too much information, Kipperoo. You must be pretty bored because you and I know she isn't very good at that. Maybe you don't know because you've only had sex with two girls in your entire life."
I mean, whatever. Just eye roll at all of it. I don't care whose dick is bigger or who does what to each other.
Let's get to the real question. Who would you rather have sex with? Joey Janela or Kip Sabian, and why?
I mean, my honest answer is Penelope Ford, but between Joey Janela and Kip Sabian, I would say Kip Sabian.
See, I knew you well enough to not give you an open-ended option where you could pick Penelope Ford. I would have thought that you would have picked Joey Janela.
I mean, both of them are attractive men.
I feel like Kip Sabian's too... plain for
maybe you know what, you're right. I think Kip Sabian might be like too pretty, so then he doesn't put in the effort.
Like, I don't think he would like, you know, rev the engine once or twice, but he's not gonna like drive you cross country. But Janela,
that's true. You know what, I do change my answer. I think Joey Janela would be a lot more fun.
There you go. So then we have on the show with the Dark Order vignette where they kind of kept that in our minds. But they called the leader, or the leader we've not seen yet, the Exalted One. Now, there is a rumor, Sondra. Have you heard the rumor about this?
No.
I don't know if this is... I mean, this could save the Dark Order for me, but we'll see. There's a rumor that the leader of the Dark Order is going to end up being Broken Matt Hardy.
What?
Because Matt Hardy did tweet out, like... literally a minute after this segment, saying my 2020 is going to be, and it was a gif of him going, "Wonderful."
Interesting. I mean, I'm here for it if that ends up being the thing. I was going to say, like, could the leader just be Awesome Kong? But
I'm all for amalgamation of the cults, to be honest.
Because I'm just saying, like, Awesome Kong and Brandy are just too similar to the Dark Order to not have any sort of affiliation. I feel like there's this sort of, like, cult conglomerate happening. But, I mean, Broken Matt Hardy would be a shout as leader, for sure. I'm intrigued. As long as it's not Vince McMahon, I'm happy.
Oh my, I would love it if it was Vince.
I know you would. I would be, I would, I'd be like, it's all over, guys. Like, no more. I can't with big budget wrestling anymore. I can't trust anything ever again.
You'd last 2 days, then you'd be like, right, okay, fine. I'm back.
I think I could quit big budget wrestling pretty easily if it weren't my job to.
Well, that's
talk
what I'm saying.
About it.
But yeah, it's your job. So, like, if you were.
But it is my job. So I would have to do it if I wanted to retain employment here.
Because if somebody else came in, you'd be like, no.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'd be raging if somebody else took my job. So I couldn't do it. You know me too well. But yeah, I don't know. Like, a leader's story could be fun. I think that I've been hurt by the higher power situation that I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know if I trust this.
I don't think that the leader of the Dark Order is going to be Tony Khan.
No, it better fucking not be. Maybe it's Adam Page. He's been kind of going off the rails lately. But I don't know. There are options. I'm into it. I still like the Dark Order. I still, like, I stand by being intrigued by the segment that you hated and that everyone seems to hate so much. Because I think if it plays out that the Dark Order become a bigger part of the show as a result, like, I think the Elite and everyone are going to rebound. Like, I don't think anyone looks at Dustin Rhodes or looks at Cody or looks at anyone, like, lower and hates them now because they got beat up by the Dark Order. I don't think that kind of thing is going to stick to them. And I think it did more for the Dark Order than it hurt any of the other people that were in that ring. So it doesn't bother me.
But I think the danger of that is that that's like saying on Retro Raw that if Midian had come in and beat up The Rock and Mankind and Steve Austin in one segment, that Mankind, The Rock, and Steve Austin would be fine. Well, yeah, of course they would, but, like, they still didn't need to be beat up by Midian. But
it wasn't, like, with the Dark Order, there were more Dark Order people than there were Elite people.
Yeah, but it was all nobodies. That was the problem. If it was, like...
Well, they're faceless by design. I don't know. Just like it.
But I think the good thing is that what we should take as a good thing from AEW is that, like, they seem to have listened to the majority of the feedback, right? But what they've done is...
But they didn't do it without just, like, dropping the angle either, which I appreciate.
That's what I mean. They're keeping the Dark Order thing going, but they've downplayed it a lot because where they put it, a lot of people weren't happy about it. So the fact they're listening and reacting to stuff is a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get Jon Moxley versus Trent. Moxley getting the big win. We even got a moment with Orange Cassidy and Moxley.
Loved it. Loved it. I mean, it was very hokey, right? Like, Orange Cassidy getting in the ring and just kind of staring at Jon Moxley. And I was like, is this going to be another situation where it should be a DQ? But Orange Cassidy never actually touched Jon Moxley, so it wasn't as much of a situation. He just put his hands in his pockets very deliberately and stared at him, which I appreciated. You know, I'm a big Orange Cassidy fan, and I think that he is a great part of the show. And the crowd popped for him putting his hands in his pockets. And... that's great. I think it's awesome. I really like Jon Moxley versus Trent. I thought it was a lot of fun. I like the best friends dynamic so much, with Chuck Taylor getting in the ring with Trent and then inviting Orange Cassidy into the ring, and Orange Cassidy just can't be bothered, so he doesn't get into the ring at the beginning. The best friends entrance video is the best entrance video in all of wrestling, and this was fun.
Yeah, this is a great use of Orange Cassidy to do this kind of stuff. And he's great with best friends. Moxley gets the big win. Then they do the post-match thing where Sammy Guevara comes out, and we see a promo from a pre-taped interview with Jericho where he's got this really fancy car, and he talks about, you know, he's not offering black masks like the Dark Order or locks of hair. He's offering co-leadership and EVP of the Inner Circle. It would have 49% stake in the Inner Circle. They could run AEW together. What was really clever about this was that Jericho referenced the other cults, which was good, because why would he not? Mm-hmm. The 49% thing is great. Do you know whose car it was?
Well, because the Inner Circle doesn't seem so much like a cult as it seems like just a faction, right? Yeah, like, it doesn't seem like they have any sort of, like, higher power or guiding force or anything. It's just Jericho being a dick.
Do you know whose car it was that they used?
No.
So it was Tony Khan's dad's car.
Really?
And apparently he, like, is over the moon with, like, AEW, because they're doing so much better than, like, TNT expected they were going to be doing. they're like way ahead of expectations, and Tony Khan's dad, Shad Khan, is like over the moon and loves it. And like he, when they were going to do a thing where Jericho was going to offer a car, he was like, use my Ford GT. That car is worth $750,000.
That's an insane amount of money that I can't even fathom. But no, that's good to hear, though, that Shad Khan is behind AEW and is a fan of AEW and is happy with its performance, because if he wasn't, then that could spell some problems, right? But if everyone's really happy with how it's going, then that means that they're going to be around for a little while. Yeah. I hope.
And then Moxley said afterwards he's always considered Jericho a friend, and next week he's going to have his answer live and in person.
This whole joining the Inner Circle thing is interesting. Like, the thing is, I don't trust Jericho. Like, and I don't think anyone should trust Jericho, but Jericho offering co-leadership to Moxley, like, that just seems like another thing that Jericho wants to get Moxley under his thumb. And so, of course, I don't want John Moxley to join the Inner Circle, and I don't think that he will, but there's intrigue there for me. Like, I'm more interested in this storyline than I thought I would be, because it seems like the obvious outcome is, of course, John Moxley will not join the Inner Circle. Of course, he's going to say, no, fuck you. And then they will fight. But I don't know why, but it's just kind of gripping me more than that. And I like it.
But I mean, this is what used to happen in wrestling. When, like, if you had a match, like a main event match, you knew was going to happen in like 8 weeks, you would put some twists and turns in front of the match, and that would get you there.
Like, will Moxley pretend to join the Inner Circle to try and get one up on Jericho?
Oh, I hope so. I really do. I really hope he does. Then
I find this so much more intriguing than John Cena joining the Nexus.
Oh my god. I literally got like a PTSD flashback there. We got Sammy Guevara versus Dustin Rhodes. At one point, Dustin Rhodes does a Canadian Destroyer on the apron, and I don't understand how he's 51 years old, and I love him so incompletely. Hager ends up getting involved, allowing Sammy Guevara to get the win. I really want to see Hager and Dustin Rhodes. I'm into it.
Actually, I do too. I really, really do. I know, I think on Retro, we were talking about Jack Swagger's WWE title run not being very good, but I've been kind of a fan of him as a wrestler. And I don't know, I think it could be good. Dustin Rhodes is incredible. Like, how that man is 51 years old and can do the things that he's doing. Like, he's so much better now than when we were watching him on Retro Raw a year or two ago. Like, how? I don't understand. I mean, obviously he has experience behind him, but he's also like, I mean, GDP yoga really is magic, I feel. But I think, I read a stat that now after his match with Sammy Guevara, he's wrestled in 5 different decades.
Yeah, because he started in like 87 or 88. So he wrestled in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, and the 2020s.
And he's so good. And I mean, like, Jericho's similar, right? Where he has been doing this forever and keeps reinventing himself and just keeps being awesome. Like, it is disgusting how good he is at his job. Like, I mean, we just saw him in New Japan, and then he delivers this killer, like, you know, like, really interesting promo and story on AEW, and he has the champion there, and all this stuff is happening. Seeing the AEW belt in a New Japan show, by the way, was like really cool. But yeah, like, Dustin Rhodes, just like, shout out to that guy being so, so good. It's incredible. I don't understand. I really liked this match. I'm super into Sammy Guevara too, but it bothers me that, because I know that you're watching the fight version of Dynamite. I'm not. Like, I'm watching the, you know, broadcast version as presented to me here in these United States of America.
So you missed the bit off air.
So he has cue cards and things, but I can't tell what's happening.
Yeah, he basically has cue cards and stuff. But the funnier part later on is, right before the main event, they just, like, don't turn off JR and Taz and Excalibur's mics. And JR's like, so we just read the fucking graphic, right? Do we need to read the graphic? And, like, they're just having this whole conversation. Like, it's so good.
I live for that kind of stuff. I'm so mad I can't watch that version without, like, VPNs and all of that kind of stuff.
Can you not VPN it?
I could, but then I would have to pay for a VPN, because the free ones are like a security nightmare and also don't work. Because a lot of times, like, I can get a VPN to make it think that I'm, like, I don't know, in some random country, but usually for the UK, it's harder.
How much is a VPN to buy?
I don't know. It's not that expensive, but I don't really want to, like, pay money.
Okay. Well, we can have this conversation off air. Anyway, yeah, we'll talk. So then we got MJF coming out, He talks about Stipule.
My point of all of that was, I wish I could see more of the Sammy Guevara shenanigans with sound, because it looks like he's doing really interesting character work during the ad breaks, and I can never hear them.
Well, the one thing that they did do well here was they didn't, like, if you're watching the Fight TV version, like, it used to be that you pretty much would get stuff during the break all the time. They've kind of taken most of that away. Because I think people who are watching on...
They shouldn't be having stuff happen during the breaks. It's really frustrating.
Well, as someone who pays $4.99 a month to fight, I would like some content during the break.
But, like, you know, shouldn't most of their broadcast audience get the majority of the show and the important points of it?
They give you the little screen. My favorite thing is Alvarez.
Yeah, but you can't hear anything. And if there's a promo, half the time it's a promo happening. Like, if it's a match, like, if stuff is happening in the little screen and it's matches, that's fine. Because, you know, you can still watch the action or whatever. But if it's a promo that they don't recap after the break, how are you supposed to know what happened?
Listen, don't come at me. I don't run the place.
I know. I'm just saying. I think it's a valid criticism.
MJF has 3 stipulations for his match if he gives Cody a match at the pay-per-view. First one, he can't touch him until February 29th. Secondly, he has to beat an opponent of his choice, which would be Wardlow, in a cage match. And third is that MJF would get to whip him 10 times with his leather belt, and the scars left in his back will be reminders that his name is MJF and he's better than him. This promo didn't pop as much for me as MJF ones usually do, but I thought it was fine. I just something was missing for me from this, and I don't know what it was.
Well, there weren't any, like, real pointed insults, and nothing really changed that much, right? Like, I know that he presented stipulations for getting to face Cody, but...
I like the first two. Like, I like the one about you can't touch him. I think that's good. Mm-hmm. I like the cage match with Wardlow, because you can imagine that whoever helps and, you know, when he jumps off and wins, that's going to be good. The third one's where they kind of lost me, like, the 10 whips.
The 10 lashings, essentially.
Yeah. This, 12 years a slave?
Apparently so. I mean, it's basically just going to make Cody into more of a sacrificial lamb, and it'll probably be like, I don't know, are they trying to channel that whole, like, Tommy Dreamer Kane thing where you just get beat up a whole bunch and then everyone likes you because you're badass, maybe?
I guess so. But yeah.
I'm referencing that correctly, right?
You are.
Okay.
But no, this didn't quite click for me as much as the post- Full Gear MJF promo that did.
This one just seemed like more of, okay, now you're setting some stuff into play. It didn't like grab me and be like, oh my gosh, shit's going down, because I think we already know that shit's going down, so it doesn't seem like it's like a big revelation, but it does seem like it's advancing the story, so it's fine. But I'm not going to be like jumping out of my chair being like, everyone has to see this MJF promo. It's a transition period.
Adam Page is going to be on commentary for the main event. He has a whiskey. I kind of like Adam Page just getting drunk.
It made me laugh. Like, was this when he was in the bar?
That was earlier. This is when he's out for the commentary at the match. But yeah, earlier on, he's at the bar when Private Party are there.
Yeah.
Private Party are hitting on Jen Decker, whatever her name was. And then Page is behind them, and he poured whiskey at the bar, and he was upset that they touched his glass.
So this is when he was with the commentary team?
No, so initially he was backstage with Private Party in the interview segment.
Right, he was backstage at the bar. I remember that.
And then he came out and he was on commentary for the main event.
Yeah.
And when he was...
Did the Full House theme?
Oh, really?
And then inserted Adam Page, like, because you know how he's, like, looking around and then goes, oh, like, notices the camera? Uh-huh. It made me laugh. Yeah, and I also liked that his little Chiron said, has been drinking.
His little Chirons are weekly make my week. They're
the best part.
So then the main event is the Elite, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against Lucha Brothers and Pac. And finally, the Elite get a big win. And then after the match, Cody comes out to join the celebration. They're inviting Hangman Page, but Page is like, I didn't do anything. Like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. The two things that are really good about this is, like, this promotion is only happening because of the Elite. It's in the name of the promotion. So I feel like, let these guys win some matches. Or, I mean, I know it's these guys who are trying to be, like, very diplomatic and, like, you know, just be part of the team. But they need to be big stars.
They don't want to appear to be Triple H, even though Cody totally wants to be Triple H.
But do you know what? Cody's way more over because he has been a bit like Triple H. And, like, you have to... I'm not saying you should be full Triple H. Not, no. I'm not. But at the same time, like, Omega and the Bucks have, I think, sacrificed themselves a little bit too often and become a little bit more kind of just guys on the show. And they shouldn't be. They should be big stars, and they felt it here. So again, they've listened to the crowd, and it felt like they did a big moment. And I thought the Paige stuff at the end was really interesting, because he's not just like fully turned heel, but he's like giving good reasons to why. I didn't do it. I'm not going to come in and celebrate with you. Like, you guys got the win. Like, I didn't need to come in there.
Actually kind of really interested in disillusioned Adam Page. Kind of like how I'm interested a little bit more in Britt Baker, because, you know, she's disillusioned. She's mad that Rhea won the title, and she's talking about Rhea like stealing the victory, even though she pinned her clean. Like, it was a flash pin, but still, like, it wasn't like with shenanigans or anything. I kind of like disillusioned Adam Page throughout this show, just kind of like getting drunk and being a bit despondent and not really knowing his place. I think that's really interesting character story for Adam Page and make him far more interesting. Like, I'm here for Cowboy. I love his embroidered shirts. And so, I don't know. Like, the dissension between him and the Elite, I think, is very interesting. Did they do anything to him to make him leave? Or is it just like he's on a journey of self-discovery?
He's on a journey of self-discovery.
I'm here for it.
They've got a lot set up for next week. You've got the tag match with Kenny Omega and Hangman Page against Private Party. You've got the Moxley answer for Jericho. You've got Cody and Dustin against the Lucha Brothers. You get Statlander and Rio for the women's title. So they've set up a lot of stuff for next week, which I think is good, especially when they're going to be going head to head with NXT again.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next week. Like, I mean, I'm looking forward to NXT as well. I don't know if NXT has matches planned or what they have going on, but Wednesday night should be another good night of wrestling.
Wednesday, we do have a first round match in the Dusty Tag Classic with Gallus versus the Undisputed Era, which should be great.
Oh, yeah. How is that round one? I don't understand how that's round one. I am baffled by the fact that that's round one, and I really would like to see Gallus beat the Undisputed Era. Like,
same.
I think that would be, and not just because Scotland, but like also because I think it's a more interesting story. And I think that, like, that's the NXT UK champions versus the NXT tag team champions. Like, that's a huge match. That feels like it should be happening on a takeover, not in round one of a tournament. And I think that Gallus, if they win and if they go pretty far in the tournament, I think that could be, I don't know, just more of an interesting story to make them more known to an American audience who might not watch NXT UK, because they're real good.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. So the first round, we've got Gallus and Undisputed Era. I don't know when these other matches are taking place. Maybe one other one will take place this week and two the following. We've got the Grizzled Young Veterans, Drake and Gibson against Kushida and a mystery partner. Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne against Andrews. And
do you think it's going to be Velveteen Dream?
That's a good shout. Yeah, it could be Dream. Yeah, it could be him. I've not heard anything about him coming back, so hopefully it would be him. Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne against Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster, and Imperium against the Forgotten Sons. Somebody came up with a theory that Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne is maybe being put together so like Pete Dunne can turn on Matt Riddle, and that'll be a program. I mean, I'm okay with that. I just don't want two singles guys to win the tournament again. Last year it was Aleister Black and Ricochet. They weren't a team. They didn't remain a team. It didn't really mean anything.
Well, the first year, wasn't it Samoa Joe and Finn Balor?
Yeah.
I hated that. I hated that so much. And I feel like every year...
The 2 years that it worked the best were the Authors of Pain and Undisputed Era years, where they won.
Yeah. Because
they're teams.
Because they're teams.
Yeah, because being teams should be... Yeah.
I forget. Did DIY win one of them?
No.
They didn't. They just... That's how DIY was formed, though. Was the first Dusty Classic, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Second. No, it was the first one. It was because DIY...
Because they were both in the Cruiserweight Classic, and then I think, like, they just kind of got put together as a team.
Because they beat Tyler Breeze and Bill Dempsey in round one, and then they lost to Baron...
Tyler Breeze and Bill Dempsey! Oh, man!
And they lost to Baron Corbin and Rhino in round two.
Yeah, because I remember Baron Corbin and Rhino being... Wasn't it Baron Corbin and Rhino in the final?
Yeah, against Joe and Balor.
Against Joe and Balor. I hated that. I was so mad that it wasn't a tag team. And I don't know. I feel like NXT has enough tag teams at this point, and enough tag teams that are of note, that if... I mean, are there any other... What, Kushida and Mystery Partner is going to be kind of like a two singles guys mashup, and then Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle. That's the only two that are...
That's the only two. Everybody else's teams.
Yeah, so at least there's that. Like, I don't know, the Dusty Classic for me kind of takes over storytelling a little too much in NXT. Like, it kind of hurts the program for me a lot of years, which is frustrating because I like tag team wrestling, but it just, I don't know, like, I'm more interested in the active stories being told, I guess. But I don't know, I have high hopes for this one, especially because there's so much NXT UK representation along with NXT America. I never know what to call it. I mean, it's just NXT, but I think there's some interesting matchups with the NXT UK tag teams. Like, I'm happy to see Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster there as well.
So that's it for us. We're going to head off. We'll be back on probably Friday or Saturday with the new Inside the Ropes. Sandra, what are the plugs?
You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the_ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you'll find the ITR Overrun, tons of bonus content with Kenny and Finn. Retro Raw, where you can just hear me devolve into madness. There's a Retro Nitro review if you really want to hear me be angry. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for clips from our live shows and interview content and all that good stuff. And go to InsideTheRopes.co.uk/tickets to buy tickets to see JR in February and Kenny Omega in April.
That's the ones. So to play us out, do you know what? I really like her theme song. I'm going to play Riho's theme song because if she's not going to have the women's title for much longer, I just want to remember this little jaunty video game number.
It's a very good tune. And I like Riho. I don't know. I find other women more interesting than her.
That's fair. Okay, well, thank you for listening, everybody. Thanks for all your support, as always. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.